Welcome to Method in Madness, and today's guest is Reinier van Lanschot, member of European Parliament and co-founder of the Dutch chapter of the Volt Europa, which is a pan-European political movement. Reinier started his career in politics and was hit with a tsunami of issues. There's been crazy turbulence from COVID to Brexit to ongoing war and crisis, and he has been able to steer his vision and mission towards bringing Europe closer than ever before. I am truly thrilled to have him as my guest, and I cannot wait to share his journey, his story, and his madness. So please help me welcome Reinier.
This is Method in Madness.
Welcome to Method in Madness, Reinier. How are you doing today?
I'm good. The sun's out. It's a winter day, but the sun is shining for the first time in a long time. Yeah. And we have an exciting week ahead of us. It's also Monday, and all of the 25 people in our team came together for an exciting meeting just now. So far, I'm good. What about you?
I'm doing well. I'm recording this from Mumbai, where the sun is actually not just shining, but scorching. So good. A few more weeks before I'm back in the Netherlands. So soaking it all in. My first question, I have been connected to you on LinkedIn for a while and I follow your posts, is that you have been in politics at an age where most people don't know what politics is about. People are so consumed in making a career, whether it's corporate and or sports. And you had the vision to make a difference to Netherlands and to Europe. So what was that calling? Do you have that one eureka moment when you felt, this is my calling, and Volt, this is my party, this is the vision that I align with, or it was a gradual process?
I think it was more a gradual process. So if I look at how I have been brought up, I've been brought up with the idea that if you had a lot of luck in your life, it also comes with the responsibility to do something for society, and that is applicable to me. And also, besides that feeling of responsibility, that at some point, if you see something that needs to be done, do it. And so that, I think, made me open towards politics at an early age. And as a, I studied law, so the laws in our society basically structure the way we live together. And so conceptually, that has always been an interesting theme for me.
Yeah.
Last but not least, I met the founders of Volt. And at the very first event they organized in the Netherlands. And then I thought, oh, hey, this is unlikely to be successful because they are young. They don't have any money. They're not famous. So that will be an uphill battle when it comes to politics. Plus, it was the time that Brexit had just happened. Nationalism was on a rise. So it would be not just an uphill battle, but a steep uphill battle. But I decided to help out a little bit, not because it would be easy, but because it is important. And that was the beginning of a gradual process that ended up in me quitting my job, stopping my commercial career, and going full-time for politics.
And you mentioned Brexit as the one of the starting points when you joined politics. And if memory serves me right, the uphill battle has only been just like, you know, climbing the Everest, because in the 10 years or roughly, if I can summarize, there's been Brexit, there's been COVID, there's been extreme right-wing activities in all over the world, war in various parts, and the recent Trump election, the US elections. So there hasn't been a dull moment, let's say, in your...
No, definitely. Since we started, I think the forces that we are trying to counter have gained a lot of ground. But more important than the forces we try to counter are the problems that we try to prevent from occurring or try to solve if they are already there. I'm mainly thinking about the economy of the future, about fighting climate change, about security. And on all those fronts, I think that the problems and the challenges have increased over time. But with that our relevance has also increased. So we see that when I joined Volt, we had a couple of hundred people that supported our cause. We had nobody who was elected. Now we have more than 150 elected officials in 9 different European countries. We have more than 35,000 members. We have activities in 32 countries. We still we have 5 people in the European Parliament, 5 members of the European Parliament. We still have a very long way to go because we are only in the national parliaments of Cyprus and the Netherlands. And in order to really make a massive change happen, it's important to be active on all levels of government in all countries of the EU. So there's still a lot of work to do, and people to inspire to join our cause. So if anybody's listening to this and feels like they want to become active, then reach out because we can always use people that are enthusiastic and full of idealism inside our movement.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to take you back the first years when you joined Volt and trying to and making the difference. Where I come from, India, when I think of politics, at least in my initial years growing up in India, I think of old people. Like, I'm not saying that's the general case. That is, there's a lot of sometimes biases as well towards young people with fresh ideas. I don't know if you faced those biases, but if they were there any conscious efforts you took in your way you approach your voters, your people, while you address them, so that you were conscious to eradicate any bias due to age, if at all, was there?
I think on the one hand, in the eyes of some people, it was a weakness. In the eyes of others, it was a massive strength. So we didn't try to shy away from it, but actually embrace it. Because I believe in life, if you embrace the parts that might be seen as weaknesses, they can become your strengths.
100%.
And so many people who were like, oh, I think a younger generation should be given a try, they immediately were drawn to us. At that time, most people involved were in their 20s. Now I'm in my 30s. So when I was 18, somebody who's 35 seemed immensely old. So compared to the rest of the European Parliament, we are still quite young, but we're also not in our teens or 20s anymore, at least not the ones that we started Volt with. But another way to counter the bias that some people had was to be super thorough in our vision and very well thought through and prepared on the content of what we want to do. We see that there is a lot of politics that is almost in a different reality outside of the truth entirely. So we really emphasized fact-based policies. And we knew that people with our massive vision of uniting Europe and solving these bigger challenges, like the biggest challenges of the 21st century, people would call us very naive. So, and that has happened all the time. I think by having a real thorough plan, you can counter the thoughts about how naive we were perceived. So our first real election program in 2019 did not only have 60 pages of ideas, but it also had like a 200-page document that was explaining how would we legally do this and how would we financially do all these things that we want to do. And that was a way to counter the claim of being naive.
And that's a very amazing thing you said, 60 page planning and 200 plan page how to do that, because if I see the current vibe, over promise it gets great theatrics. We'll get you to the moon and do all these things, and it can work on the short term, but I think it backfires big time on the long term, right? If those theatrics to do crazy things, how you people promise to the voters, right?
Yes, I think if you, in general, we see a decline in trust in politicians and democracy, and that is a bad thing. And there's many reasons for it. One of them is overpromising. At the same time, I do believe, and that I have been missing as well a bit in politics, is that it should not just be a range of promises. There should also be a vision of where do we want to head, where do we want to move towards, and then you can explain like, okay, we have this grand vision that might not be achievable in 4 years, but this is the direction we want to go in. So if you compare an inspiring vision for the future with realistic steps on how to go in that direction in the time that you want to be elected, for example, these 5 years in the European Parliament now, then I think you're doing politics right.
And because I love talking about behaviors, cultures, what's the behavior shift you want to see in Europe, especially among the voters, the new voters that are coming every year? What's the behavior shift you like to see in them to be aligned to your ideology, the pan-Europe vision that we all love and support? What's this? Where do they start with coming in on board with the ideology, with so much misinformation all around? Let's tell you first step. What's the first behavior change that they need to embrace to come on board?
I think the first behavioral change is to see yourself as an active participant in our democracy and not just as a passive bystander or just a voter. Politics seems sometimes very distant because what you see in the media is mainly members of parliament, ministers, world leaders. But actually, to do politics well, it is the case that political parties are intertwined in society and that there's a whole teams surrounding it. There's a huge amount of Europeans, for example, literally thousands that helped us develop our vision. So if you think, oh, politics is not for me because I don't see myself standing in front of a camera like that as a minister, but you do have, I don't know, firsthand experience of being a caretaker in an elderly home, and you want to support the policy writing on elderly healthcare, then you can still have a very meaningful contribution to a political party in a couple of hours per week or a couple of hours per month, even. And so there is, for every person who has any talents, I truly believe this, there is room to become an active participant in our democracy. And we've seen in Europe that most political innovation has happened on the fringes, so very left, very right. But I want the more moderate people to get active. That's the big behavioral change that I'm hoping for to see within the 450 million Europeans. Then there's another one, which is not really a behavioral change, but a mindset change. So in the 20th and in the 19th century, many people who wanted to solve a problem started within the national boundaries. So think of anything, any problem you see in society, how are we going to solve this? And then the first thought process, well, within the boundaries of my nation, I saw ABC, and that's why we need to do 1, 2, 3. What I'm hoping for is that Europeans will start thinking, okay, if we see this problem in society, then what should we do in Europe? So, and that is seems maybe small, but is a very profound paradigm shift that will change the way we organize ourselves and the way we solve problems.
And I think in the current climate, if we cannot think in collaboration, we're looking at way more problems from what I read in news and see, with too many things happening around. Perfect. What has been your biggest, I wouldn't call it struggle, but what is the one thing that you had to fight the most since, well, your journey in politics hasn't been, you've seen too many already turbulence, and extreme turbulence, I would say. But what kept you going, and what was probably the hardest moment that you felt like, oh my God, this is an uphill battle?
I think it's like it's a process of ups and downs. There's always 10 things not going well, but luckily there's usually 12 or more things that are going well. Especially when trying to build a movement across Europe, Are chapters that we try to found. And then, for example, when we started in the Netherlands, we started going to local to towns across the Netherlands. We, for example, traveled to Maastricht, tried to to start a local team there. And then you would finally have a local team, but then the most enthusiastic people, their life changed, they cannot participate anymore, and the team slowly fades away. 6 months later, back to Maastricht, trying to found the local chapter again. And 6 months after that, again. So many times it took a couple of tries before we would have a longer lasting team. And you see that across all the countries where we are active, that sometimes things are going well, you're growing, you attract more members, you become more politically relevant, participate in elections. But we've also had moments where we participate in elections and lost quite big. And then a lot of the drive from people fades away because they feel their efforts may not have been meaningful. So what has kept me going is on the one hand, the bigger vision that we want to go towards, but also on the other hand, that I see that we already have very concrete impacts. For example, there was somebody who reached out to me and said, "Hey, I want to help because for many years I felt quite hopeless, and through Volt, I've regained hope." And only having that single shift in somebody's mind is already very profound.
I think I have also felt the same. I remember wrote to you a message. I think a day after that US election, I saw a speech of yours that you posted on LinkedIn, and in that mindset, that speech felt so hopeful. It gave that ray of hope. It was like the first sunshine of a spring on a spring day. And I remember writing to thinking, thank you for posting. It was such a breath of freshness, something that felt uplifting, to hear and to believe in a vision, to know that we still have a vision that can take us forward.
Yeah.
One last
Thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing. That's very kind. I appreciate it. It's also comments like these that give me the enthusiasm to continue. And we should be hopeful because there are so many good things that we can create together. Sometimes I wonder why within of course there are many things that I'm deeply worried about and that I think are going in the wrong direction, but at the same time, there's also things that give me hope. And if we don't have hope anymore for a brighter future, then we will never get active, and
Absolutely.
then it will definitely not happen. So it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So just get active and remain hopeful.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have one last question for you, and that's a little cheeky because the name of the podcast is Method in Madness, and I ask all my guests, what has been that moment of madness for you? Something you've done that is so unconventional, that is so out of the box, crazy. And today, when you look back at it, you tell yourself, wow, what was I thinking? Thank God I did it. Not sure I'll do it again. What's been that moment of
I
madness for you?
think the first thing that comes to my mind is that. So when I met the people from Volt, I thought, okay, they have a good idea, but it's very unrealistic that it will ever happen. But you know what? It's important, so let me give it a try and help out a bit. And after a few weeks, the group of people that were working on it in the Netherlands asked me to take the lead. And at first, I said no, but then I thought about it little bit longer. They asked me again, and then I said, "Okay, you know what? I will do it." And so, a couple of months later, we had decided to officially found the Dutch chapter of Volt. And then we had like a founding event with, I don't know, 150 people or something. And the idea was, yeah, somebody needs to give a speech sharing our vision. Yeah, well, you know what, Reiner, you were taking the lead. Why didn't you give that speech? Oh, wow, the television is coming. You know what? Somebody needs to talk to the television. Can you talk to the television? I remember like being prepped for this television interview, and I started laughing, and I thought to myself, like, oh my God, what has happened? 6 months ago, if somebody would have told me that I was going to start a political party, I would have laughed in their face, and would have said, no way, this is never going to happen. So that is something that I did once, that felt a little like a little bit of madness that I'm very happy about, but will not do again.
I think I love that sometimes I've seen on LinkedIn that 1 minute video you post and it has that you're smiling and running and sharing smile with colleagues and then in the parliament with a very serious face giving a talk. And I can totally imagine you at the very first speech from that jovial when you're switching to this very now I have to be all game on the face and doing the speech. I mean, sometimes we need that madness, to give us that zing and confidence. I would have loved to speak to you for hours because I think you have so much knowledge, vision, and hope that you give with every word you speak. But I know you're busy, so thank you so much for joining Method in Madness. It's been really, really an honor talking to you. It's been on my bucket list for a while to speak to you. And it's been really an honor to know your story, know your vision, and thank you for sharing hope with every sentence, every word that you speak.
That's super kind. It was my pleasure to be here, and I'm grateful that the efforts of everybody involved had this effect on you. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was yet another episode of Method in Madness. In a few weeks, I will be back with yet another incredible story. Lots of methods, lots of madness. But till then, stay mad, because there is no magic without a little madness.